I'm Michelle Orman, and this is the Couture Podcast. Artist Bibi van der Velden considers herself first and foremost a sculptor. Her primary artistic medium informs her sublime jewelry designs in many ways, including her drive to create pieces that don't need a body to become something. A lifelong collector, Bibi's jewelry transcends the expected and often incorporates unique and unusual materials, giving her work a sense of adventure and discovery. Bibi is also the founder of Avature, a multi-brand website that promotes and sells the work of other artists whom she admires. At the start of the current COVID-19 crisis, Bibi launched Avature United, committing all profits of sales on the site for 3 months to a designated fund, which will be distributed to independent designers who need help with their businesses after the crisis is over. Citing the enormous sense of solidarity she feels with the rest of the world, she noted, "We are all in this together, and this should unite us, not divide us." We were so happy to have the opportunity to talk to Bibi from her home in Portugal, where, as it turns out, Bibi has been struggling with, and thankfully, recovering from, her own positive COVID-19 diagnosis. Hello, I am here with Bibi van der Velden. Well, not actually here. How are you, Bibi? Where are you? How is everything going for you and your family right now?
Hi, Michelle. Good to speak to you. I'm phoning or calling from our house in Portugal, and I actually have the virus. I've been ill for 3 weeks, and I think I've had the worst. Touch wood, but it goes up and down a little bit. So I'm still not my old self, but hoping to get there soon. And we've been isolated since nearly the beginning of March. So already for quite a while. Wow. And I'm just so grateful that we live in the middle of nature. We're very close to the sea. We have a house in the woods. So as soon as we walk out the door, we're just between these dinosaur rocks, these kind of prehistoric big boulders and beautiful trees and the ocean in the background. So it couldn't be in a better spot.
Yeah. Well, and I bet the nature is very, it can be healing too. You know,
it's very healing. Absolutely. It's also strange sometimes, because if you walk around here, you can't imagine that there's anything wrong with the world. Mm. So it's very restoring, and we just moved here a few months ago. So the garden is still a kind of a building site, and we're doing all these different projects. So we're building a big vegetable garden, and we just finished our chicken pen, and we're hatching our own eggs. So,
so you're pretty self-sustained very soon.
Well, I have to say that's because in Portugal everything is closed, so even food shopping is very challenging. And that I've always loved the idea of growing the things that you eat. And we just went to the beach this morning, and we were plucking mussels off the rocks, and we had them for lunch.
Oh,
and
wow.
That's that whole way of living is something that appeals to me immensely. But definitely with the situation that we're in at the moment, the prospect of being able to eat out of our garden, and the eggs that we have in the morning are laid by our own chickens, is something which is nearly a necessity at the moment.
Wow. I'm very happy for you that you have that. Well, so let's go. Well, and I heard that you moved to Portugal because you recently discovered a passion for surfing.
There's always been a passion, not a lot of opportunity to practice this passion in the past. And my basis is in Amsterdam. The studio is still there, and all our colleagues and the people that we work with that's really kind of our work hub. So I commute in normal day life when we're able to travel. Mm-hmm. And we were looking for a change of lifestyle already for quite a while. And it was further spurred on by the fact that my daughter, Charlie, she just recovered from a 2-year spell of leukemia. So we had a very tough time, obviously, and we kept saying to each other, we're not going to postpone our dream. So as soon as she's well, we're off. And during those 2 years, we kind of very fluidly we came across the house that we bought, and someone offered to buy our house in Amsterdam, which wasn't for sale. So we kind of went with this wave, and we've been rebuilding. It's a mid-century modern house. It's a little bit kind of LA Hills vibe to it, and but for 40 years, nothing had been done to it. So it was a challenge to kind of respect the idea of the architect. It's a famous Portuguese architect, but still modernize it. And there's a huge humidity problem here. So you know, if you don't have like floor heating and everything isolated and well done, then you've got big issues with the humidity. We're able. Well, actually, because of the current situation, we're forbidden to go into the water, which is pretty challenging. But in normal day life, surfing is very much part of it, and just being in and around the ocean. I find it so healing.
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, and it sounds like it's very in keeping with, you know, your life overall, just this, you know, I know that you've long been a collector. So to, you know, be collecting, so to speak, this, you know, old house and respecting, you know, its soul, its essence, but making it, you know, kind of fit your lifestyle. I think that's
yeah, that's a nice comparison that you're making. I mean, there's always, I'm a sculptor. That's my background. And I kind of rolled into jewelry, because I was collecting all these kind of objects, things that I find in nature, but also antique things that I've collected over the years. And, so there's always been this recycle element in my work. And I just really believe, that something, if you put something in a different context, that it can regain a new life. And I think, in the world that we live in, where there's so much, it's so valuable to use what there is, and to I also just find that it makes you more creative in a certain way if you have boundaries to work within. It really pulls out creativity. So I always like to start around a certain material or a certain idea or something that exists, and then just transform.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting that you talk about the materials that you use, because I've been reflecting on this, you know, leading up to this conversation. And, you know, they say, we talk a lot about how jewelry, you know, tells a story. But with your work, I feel like language is almost too small. You know, and you're incorporating, you know, 40,000-year-old mammoth tusks and, you know, actual, you know, beetle wings. And, you know, I've heard that it was really difficult for you to obtain the mammoth tusks originally. But, you know, what do you feel like these materials, these really unique and unusual materials, kind of convey about you as an artist? You know, because it's not this kind of straight storytelling that you often get, which is great. But I just feel like your work really kind of transcends that. And I don't know if it's the sculptural influence, the materials, but I just wanted to talk to you about that a little bit.
Well, in the case of the mammoth tusk, which is what I find very interesting, it's a very interesting material. I mean, apart from the story, which is already, you know, speaks to me in so many different ways. But the material itself is something that each piece is an original, because they're all carved in that material, and it's quite elastic in a certain way. But at the same time, it's 40 to 60 to 70,000 years old, so it can also be very brittle. So we only use the core. We dry it for 2 years. I mean, this was of course a very long expedition in a certain way, because when I started using it, and that was nearly 10 years ago, I read this article in National Geographic, and that they were, because of global warming, These teeth were popping up everywhere in the ice caps, but also in they even find them in Holland in kind of like turf ground where they've been conserved all those years. And that enough was being found that, you know, I first thought, you know, it goes into museums and you never see, you know, that it's impossible to obtain something like that. But for me to then find out how do I obtain these teeth? How do I import, export? How do we treat them? So I was in touch with the British Museum, who gave me a special wax. So you get a little jar when you buy a piece, and it's kind of all part of this magic that you contribute to by buying a piece and wearing it. And so to work in it, it's like sculpting. In my opinion, it improves with age because it's the material, it darkens a little bit and you see the patterns in it, which is, I think, also important to note that they're completely different to elephant ivory. So there's no mistaking one for the other. And as we're a very sustainable brand, like you know, those are things that are very important to us and should be for everyone. But and in the case of the beetle wings, is that they eat them as a delicacy. with the whole situation that we're in at the moment, it's like maybe people want to reconsider
exactly
eating all these strange things. But the wings are kind of like a little bit of a leftover material. And what I love is that I'm so connected to nature in so many different ways, is that if you look at the scarab wings, there's so much color and so much iridescence in them. And there's no way that you can create them with enamel or with anything else. So the fact that nature wins in a certain way and that humans can't improve on what there already is, I love. And that's the same love that I have for pearls, for instance, is that that's like the perfect example for the equilibrium in nature. And that's just something that we as humans, although we try to, of course, be elevate ourselves above nature, but I'm very satisfied when we're not able to do that sometimes and show some humility, hopefully.
I love that. Nature wins. So what other ways does your background as a sculptor, in what other ways does that influence your jewelry design and that whole process, your creative process?
It does a lot, actually. And in the beginning, I wasn't even so aware of it because I tried to keep these two things quite separate from each other. And now I just see that there's so many parallels. Also kind of from a technical perspective, you know, if I make a sculpture and I make a cast and then a cast in bronze, for instance, it's the same as what you would do in goldsmithing. You know, you would carve something in wax and then make a mold and cast it in gold. It's just the dimensions are usually quite different. But no, I think for me, what's important is that I would say that 90% of the jewelry that I make, I try to make into something which is a thing on its own. So it doesn't necessarily need a body to come alive. And as you know, also from Overture perspective, I'm the biggest jewelry lover, and I champion a lot of other brands, and I wear lots of different kinds of jewelry from different designers and also things. And then obviously the things that I make myself. So I love a mix of jewelry, but for the things that I make, I would say that I prefer something which doesn't necessarily need to be on you to become a piece of jewelry, but which could also be part of, you know, of a nightstand and that you look at when you wake up in the morning. Mm-hmm. And it's like it's a miniature sculpture in a certain way.
Yeah. Your work really is. So let's talk about Overture a little bit. You opened in 2016. I remember we were in Paris together, I think in 2015, and you were talking about it. And you're just so passionate about it and about promoting these other designers. So where did that come from? You know, what was really the drive to start something like that, to start this multi-brand website?
Well, first of all, I think the main basis at the time was that I was really missing something like that in the industry, and which was only concentrated on creative fine jewelry. And I thought it was a shame that there wasn't someone out there telling the stories of these people that I, of course, are in touch with and have connected with over the years. I've been in I've had my brand now for over 15 years. So along the way, you meet and you connect with a lot of special people from a lot of different angles in the of the industry. And so that was the first incentive. I wanted to create a platform in which you as a viewer get pulled into the creative world of these designers. And I think that curation is very important. I think that, you know, everything is out there in general. If you want to find something, you go on the internet and you can find it. But to come into a an atmosphere or a space in which there are things put together which make sense in a whole, and I love the feedback that I get quite a lot from people is that they say, although because we've got over 50 designers at the moment, although everyone has a very strong signature and their own, and they stay very true to themselves, it still feels as if it's very cohesive. So it all feels as if it's from the same family. We're a family of designers in which there's a lot of space for collaboration and also just to kind of supporting each other in many ways. And with the crisis that we're in at the moment, and at the same time, also something to add, we're also a little bit of a movement against mass-produced luxury. And that's something that I'm so passionate about. And especially in jewelry, you know, with the prices, because of the materials we use, I mean, why would you invest in a piece which thousands of other people are wearing? You know, mm-hmm. and it's what is the differentiator between you and the next person? You know, and these are all people who are true artists, and they make something which is different. They've developed a technique or a style or a signature which you can't find, which truly belongs to them. And so we're putting together all the real McCoys on the website, and there's of course a lot of copying going on in this industry, so we really try to steer clear from people who are too much inspired by other people.
Like too derivative. And one of the things that I love about the site is not only you do fantastic profiles of the designers, and it's not just, okay, this is a cool person. You're really establishing a narrative of these jewelry designers as artists, as opposed to creators of some sort of commodity. Their mm-hmm. medium just happens to be precious metals and gemstones. But you're really painting them as artists, and which they are. And I think it's gone a long way, and I'd like to see more of this in the world of just sort of shifting that conversation. Because when I look at people like you and the people on the site, I don't look at you as jewelry designers. I mean, obviously you make beautiful jewelry designs, but I think of you more as artists. And I think that you've done a wonderful job of creating that narrative and that, you know, kind of operating under that paradigm as opposed to, you know, come get this beautiful thing that goes with your dress, which it is a beautiful thing that goes with your dress, but.
Yeah, but that's nearly secondary. And I thank you for the way that you described that, because that's how I feel. And that's what we try to achieve on Overture. And I think that, you know, jewelry for a long time was too much within the realms of fashion. And because I think if you look back, I don't know if you agree, maybe kind of like 20 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, there was this great shift that jewelry became so much, I mean, apart from, you know, the more classical estate jewelry, and which, you know, for so many people was so far from their lives and within the means of what they were able to, you know, mm-hmm. buy or to create for themselves. There's been certain movement in fine jewelry, a lot of artists choosing that as their medium, and there what I love about Overture is that Obviously, it's an online platform, but we do much more than that. We do a lot of offline events, exhibitions, shows around the world. We do PR for our designers. And we went a step further is also to see, okay, what are their individual needs and how can we kind of tap into that? So for some emerging designers, we're doing product consultancy. For other ones, there's a big gap still between the States, I would say, in Europe, for instance, with certain brands, is that some want to grow their private client base, others want more recognition. So we really try to kind of make an individual fit per brand. And now with the crisis, we were trying to kind of formulate, you know, what's our answer to this whole situation. And then we came to the conclusion that what our initial idea was for Overture is that we're going to continue and elaborate on that, and that's to really support these designers. So we set up a fund, which is called Overture United. We have pledged all our proceeds to go into that fund for the next few months.
It's fantastic.
And we initiated it with 10,000 euros, and we are using that as financial aid for the designers that will eventually need it, because this is, of course, such a blow for so many independent businesses. But more than just that is we're also, again, looking, okay, what are the individual needs per designer? So we've collaborated with a manufacturer who is doing manufacturing for the designers that aren't able to access their own manufacturing companies or studios. And they're doing this all free of labor charge, which is fantastic.
It's amazing.
So we're really trying to kind of hope that we together can kind of pull through this period, and that everyone is still able to continue their businesses afterwards.
You are really putting your money where your mouth is, so to speak, with the referencing the Overture as family. I mean, that is what family does for one another, right? So it's fantastic. And you were among the first to come, you know, it's been beautiful. It's been heartening to see our industry, and specifically the couture community, coming together. But you were among the first. I mean, you were out of the box before we even in the States kind of recognized this as the crisis that it's now become, you know? So what do you have any insight into? Is it just by nature of being in Europe? Or, I mean, because you really just kind of put this together, and you've got a committee in place and legal counsel for at the end of this few month time period, you're going to be able to look at everything and distribute funds according to need. So what, you know, are you clairvoyant? Are you psychic? Like what?
Hardly. No, then I would have, I would have made some different choices a while ago. No, I think we have a little bit of it's just a geographical thing, is that the crisis hit us sooner than the States. I think that Portugal, where we're in at the moment, is kind of at its peak, and Amsterdam, they're still anticipating it. And I know, for instance, that it's said that in LA, it's only going to hit like mid May. So, I mean, there is a bit of a delay in a certain way, mm-hmm. To where you guys stand at the moment compared to us. And if you see, for instance, how hard Italy has been hit and still has, you know, and they're still kind of in the midst of things, then I think we just have a bit more information to our disposal. But we really tried to, I think there's two main ways that you can go about the situation that we're in at the moment. And that's either holding your breath and clenching your teeth and trying to cut as many costs as possible, and then hope that you survive the storm with all the negativity that comes from it. But we as a company also wanted to achieve something for our team, which is also something positive in these times. And if you see with how much energy and enthusiasm our team is working day and night to trying to achieve what we have in mind, then it's so heartwarming, and it's something which instead of being depressed the whole day, it's also giving everyone the energy to kind of pull through. So it's also a bit selfish in a certain way.
I'll take it. No, but I can see that focusing on that positivity is empowering, as opposed to paralyzing. And I'm sure that we're all going through ebbs and flows of both of those feelings. So to be able to give that to your staff and your team, I think is a beautiful gift. So what other ways are you finding joy and beauty in the current crisis?
The funny thing was, is that I think like practically everyone in the industry, I travel a lot, and sometimes more than I would like to. Because the main bulk of my business is in the States. I do my production in Bangkok, and PR and marketing through London. Then I live in Portugal, and we have our studio in Amsterdam. So I'm on the road a lot. And I had decided to take the month of May off, also because we just moved, and I haven't been, I haven't just had the chance to kind of ground enough here. And we still had like 200 unpacked boxes. And I mean, all the things that come with making a major move. So I was really working hard to kind of keep this month free. And we already had a few shows planned. And of course, at the end of the end of May, it's couture time. Mm-hmm. So, and then this was, so I really tried to see this period also as a gift in a certain way. And then you just have to kind of block out the whole business side of it, because if you think, dwell too much upon that, then it becomes very, very depressing. But just having the quality time with my two children, with my husband, with our dog, living in this new surroundings. And as I just touched upon in the beginning, we're trying to do things which are connected to growth or creating things a lot. So building that big vegetable garden, having all these pots with seeds and seeing from a daily perspective, oh, look, there's something coming up, and taking care of that. I'm doing a lot of art projects with the children, I'm forcing myself to lay away my phone for long periods of time. So try, for instance, on Sunday, I'm trying to really kind of not look at my phone at all, and pick it up on Monday morning again. And I think I kind of created this newsletter with some of the things that I came across, is that trying to create a moment in the day where you kind of go inside and either meditating or putting some things on paper, doing some yoga. And as you mentioned, I've literally been too ill to be able to do a lot of those things. So I'm very much looking forward to kind of having the space to work. And I want to work on my Portuguese as well, because it's still terrible. But I've never been so busy as I am now, because it's kind of homeschooling two children and trying to keep two companies afloat and alive from a distance is pretty challenging. On top of, I must say, cooking, because I've always loved to cook. I used to have a catering company when I was at the Art Academy. Mm-hmm. That was how I earned my living for cooking, by cooking for people. And but it's funny with cooking, is that it's, you cook either to be creative, or you cook to eat and to live. And if you don't have the time for it, then you're not, you're not putting the creativity in there, and it's not giving you something back except hopefully nice food. But so now, also because food here has become a literal challenge to obtain, that each piece that you put into something, I give it so much kind of like love and thought. And every, every vegetable or everything in the fridge which needs to be eaten, you become so creative. So that's something which is giving me, which is keeping me quite sane as well, because it's so connected to survival, you know, feeding my family in a healthy and fun way. So, I mean, yeah, there are lots of things. I've got like lists of stuff that I would love to do, but just too little time at the moment. But we just heard that that the children's school is going to be closed till after September, which was a huge blow.
Do your kids like their teacher? Meaning you?
Meaning me. Yeah, I don't have the right personality. I'm trying to be very patient and understanding, but there's also just some things that I have gaps in my own education, I think. So I'm really trying to find ways in how to explain something that it seems logical. And sometimes I see, you know, these stares looking at me. I have no clue what you're talking about, and I think I understand. Neither do I. No, my husband is better in getting a lot of the kind of, they work with an online system, which are probably a lot of children around the world are doing at the moment. And he's really good in kind of getting all the assignments done, like duck, 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 duck. And I'm more focused on doing kind of like going more in depth. So with reading and doing art projects and things like that. And that's something that I love to do. So if we're able to divide it a little bit like that, then I'm sure we can get through the next half year.
Yes. Well, and what do you think of the, I mean, obviously I know what you're saying. I understand it, like, all of the, you would think we have a lot more time on our hands, but we don't. But what of these things that you're learning do you feel like you're going to want to bring into the after? Because we know there will be an after this. So what,
of course,
you know, is it, are you going to, do you think you'll put your phone down on Sundays, just like moving forward? Do you think, you know, you'll lighten your load on your travel?
I hope there will be a lot of values from a personal perspective, but also from a collective perspective that we'll take with us. And the only thing which is sometimes, I mean, humanity has shown that we are really hard learners. You know, it's like you think we would have learned from different periods in history not to repeat ourselves. But so I'm hoping that there, for me personally, it's I've never, and it's kind of part of what I do, you know, in my work, but it's also part of my personality, is that I never slow down. So I never really take the chance to contemplate or to digest things that happen. So I'm really hoping to incorporate that. And I've never been in one spot so long. I've now been in Portugal now nearly for a month and a half, which is great. I mean, I'm really, there's nothing that I'm missing about traveling or seeing other people or being on the move the whole time. I'm really loving every moment of being here and really having kind of like quality time with my family, but also with myself. So those are definitely things that I want to kind of change in as far as it's possible. But also, you know, I feel so connected to the rest of the world, because I think this is for the first time in history probably that we're all fighting the same thing. You know, I feel so It's a typical thing with news, for instance, in the time that Corona was still very much happening in China. You know, we were all, of course, aware of the fact and very empathetic to other people's situation. But it doesn't really hit home till the moment, of course, that you have people in your surroundings who are becoming ill, that you become ill yourself, that. That people pass away, that you, you know, that you really feel that we're in it together, and that kind of connectedness. I hope that we can hold on to that, and because I've always been so involved and so connected with the environment, I'm very interested to see what this is going to do. And I think, you know, we somehow, although we're capable of so much, we haven't been able to reverse the effects of global warming. And I think that this is a very clear signal, you know, okay, mm-hmm. then nature is taking care of it in their own way.
So I would agree with you. I think that this is a reckoning of sort. And I think this is Mother Nature kind of, you know,
yeah,
trying to write
a
itself.
Very clear.
Yeah, a very clear message. Yeah.
So, very clear message. And hopefully at the end of this, we'll be able to see what the effects are long term of the fact that everything has been paused for an X amount of weeks, months, and hopefully we can, you know, take that into account in how we conduct our daily life afterwards. So I'm hopeful.
Well, I am as well, and you are giving me hope. And I have, as you know, a list of questions, but I think given the fact that I don't want to be taxing on your energy, we'll definitely, when you're feeling better and hopefully in person, I want to sit down with you again. And I want to learn more about your childhood and, you know, your specific path and your creative process. And I could talk to you for hours. But I think we can say this has been a wonderful discussion, and I really appreciate your time and energy. And I want to let you get some rest. And I look forward to sitting together over a glass of wine. And
yes.
And having a conversation about design and creativity, and hopefully a lovely retrospective of, you know, all the positive lessons that we all learned and how we came together as a community. And hopefully that'll be sooner rather than later.
Yes, I completely agree with you. Thank you so much. And let's definitely continue the conversation.
For sure.
Hopefully very soon.
Very soon. Well, and feel better. I know that everyone in the Couture community will be rooting for you and praying for you and wishing you continued good health and mending.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Couture Podcast. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts.